Welcome back to this second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
That's all right.
And we're back with Leading Edge Medicine. Welcome to the show. This is hour number two. Lots of time to answer your questions with Dr. Samira Umat and Dr. Jerry Mixon in the studio. Here's that number to get through. 1-800-465-8770. And Rick, we lost you. Call us right back and we'll get you on with your question. Right now, headed to Tacoma, we have Bill on the line. Welcome, Bill.
Hello, Bill.
Good morning.
How can we help you, sir?
I have a question about AFib. Yeah. And my doctors ordered a sleep test. And I took the sleep test. And I'm going in for review on Monday. Mm-hmm. And they did give me a little bit of information. And I thought I would ask your opinion so I'd be a little bit more knowledgeable when I go to the meeting on Monday. Okay. They said some of the results from my sleep test were that I had 87 events. I guess that's when you stop breathing. Mm-hmm. And my oxygen rate is 67. I'm wondering if you could give me an analysis on that report and then possibly give me a tip.
Well, my guess is they're going to want to help you get better oxygenated during the night.
I thought I was a really good sleeper. You know, I go to bed around 9 o'clock and I wake up around 8 in the morning and my bed's not messed up or anything. And I always thought I was a good sleeper, but they said I'm not.
Yeah, it's interesting. And assuming the electrodes and everything stayed well attached during the night, too, I would think might have an impulse on it. Or an impact on it.
How many episodes is he having? Are you having, sir?
60-some.
Whoa. So that's severe sleep apnea.
My oxygen rate is 67, and the events is 37.
Oh, 37.
Okay. So more than 30 events is considered severe sleep apnea.
Yeah. And, well, oxygenation at 67 is kind of scary.
It is.
You know, most of us, when we're walking around during the daytime, are running oxygenations of 98% to 99%. So if you're getting down to 67% at night,
you're not getting oxygen to the brain.
Precisely. Then the question is, are you sleeping or are you unconscious? Because that's pretty low. So my guess is that when you go in and talk to your sleep doctor, they're probably going to want to do something to get you better oxygenated during the night, whether it's a CPAP or have you evaluated for radio frequency treatments in your upper airway, or at some point somebody needs to evaluate exactly what's going on. Why are you not sleeping so well at night? Why are you stopping breathing? And then, of course, what intervention would they choose to overcome it?
Well, you already gave me one real good tip, and I think I will question the exam, that maybe the electrodes weren't fastened properly.
Yeah, I guess that's possible.
Because
did you do it at home?
My report seems extreme. I would think that over the number of years I've been around 85, that I'd be dead with oxygen rate at night at 67.
Well, unless whatever's causing that to happen, it just started. But, you know, if you're noticing no difference in your sleep patterns, your energy in the daytime is good, you're not getting drowsy halfway through the day and having to, you know, take a nap, then if you're still at your long-term baseline, then I would question it.
Very good. Excellent tip. And thank you so much for the information.
All right. Take care, sir.
You know, the issue here is the AFib, right? That's what prompted the sleep study.
Yeah. Yes.
And we know that there is a correlation between AFib and sleep apnea.
Yes,
so
there
is. If you have sleep apnea, you're likely to get AFib. And AFib increases risk for stroke and heart attacks. And can be debilitating in some people with shortness of breath and fatigue and inability to work out. So you have to now balance how bad is the AFib, and then do we treat the AFib first or we treat sleep apnea, which could be triggering the AFib?
Yeah. And if the sleep apnea is a legitimate issue, and that's assuming that the test was, you know, appropriate. And I would think that the device that is monitoring him would have some sort of alarm that says, hey, the electrode came loose.
Mm.
You know, I mean, that would be my guess. Okay? Okay. Usually when they're building these electronics, they build them with redundancies and safety factors.
Okay.
So, you know, I was just kind of thinking what sorts of things could possibly give you a low reading. And if the sensors were not feeding the information to the device well, that I guess, you know, could do it. Boy.
I wonder if they do this study again.
Well, yeah, you know, it used to be you had to go to a sleep lab to do this.
Yes.
And now they do them at home.
Home devices.
And so it's much cheaper, much easier to repeat a study.
For sure. And then if his AFib is really bad, I would say go ahead and do the treatment for the sleep apnea and then repeat the sleep study and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
He might find that he's sleeping better and has more energy once his sleep apnea is fixed.
It may well be.
Yeah.
All right. We've got some more callers we'll get to, and I do want to give you that phone number for our studio. It's 1-800-465-8770. This is Leading Edge Medicine. Of course, we're brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics. We want you to be a patient here at Longevity. And one of the first steps is by making a phone call and asking for that free health analysis appointment. That's what gets you in the door to one of our clinics in Kirkland, Tacoma, and in Linwood. We've got three clinics for you. And when you come in, they'll do a simple blood test to find out if you are at risk for diabetes, and also an in-body test. And Dr. Umat, could you explain what that in-body lets the doctors know what's going on?
It's brutal. Don't do it.
Yeah.
I kind of like mine.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. Yeah.
Yeah, Mr. 9% body fat.
Hey, if you've been working out, it's always nice to take a look at it. But if you would rather not know and bury your head in the sand, then you don't want to do it.
But it is important for the doctors.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's important for you.
For you to know so the doctors can tell you what's going on.
I mean, you know, we've said this time and time again. Weight and fat is a risk factor for every imaginable disease on the planet. And it's like, you know, smoking causes lung cancer. It's like weight causes diabetes. Weight causes cancer. Weight causes degenerative joint disease. Weight causes dementia. You name it, the list just keeps going on and on. The question is that weight coming from muscle or fat? Muscle is the currency of aging. You want healthy muscle. Fat, however, is detrimental to you. It will increase risk for all chronic diseases for you, along with aging itself. And so if you do have high fat, then it'll tell you where is it high. Is it in the visceral fat or not? If it is visceral fat, then this is dangerous fat. And that's what the in-body tells you. How much of a risk are you at with a high visceral fat level? And if you are at risk, then this is something you can change. And if we help change your physiology, then your likelihood of succeeding in reducing that visceral fat is much higher. And now with the newer medications, I think there's so much hope, much more than even when we've been doing this show, Jerry.
Yes.
I feel that there people just, I don't know, I'm just passionate about what we do. I think we can reverse people's lives. We can increase the health span and their lifespan. And to me, that's what life is all about. If you can be healthier as you get older, and enjoy the last decade of your life to its fullest, then that's what life is meaningful about. So the in-body tells you how much visceral fat you have. And if you have high amounts of visceral fat, then it is a risk factor for you. And to lower it, we have physiological help we can give you, diet, nutrition, and so on and so forth. And the least, invasive ways. So you don't want to find out afterwards. You want to find out before so that you can actually change the trajectory of your future.
Absolutely. We want you to come in and take those two simple tests, talk to the doctor, and then they will offer you a blood panel test. This is huge. It tests so many things. Like what, Dr. Umat, will this test? It's like $595,
yeah.
But it's $2,000 worth of tests.
And I would say to everybody listening today that if you're coming in to do the free health analysis visit, plan to spend $595 on yourself. Make
yes.
this your gift to you. And to people who are in your orbit that you care about, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. Because this $595 is literally just the tip of the iceberg. We look at things that many other providers will never look at for you. And the reason for looking at that is because of your physiology. As you're changing, it is not okay to just say, oh, I'm getting older, my thyroid is getting sluggish. Oh, I'm getting older, my hormones are getting lower.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm getting older, my eyesight is getting poorer. Oh, I'm getting older, my fat is getting higher. Oh, I'm getting older, my risk for cancer is getting higher. It's not just okay to know that and say that. You can actually do something about it. Invest that $595 in yourself. Go ahead and do the blood test. And then spend the hour with a doctor that'll show you your test results and tell you what they can do to help you change everything that they're seeing in your blood panel. We've picked up cancers. We've picked mm-hmm. up high cholesterol. We've picked up diabetes. We've definitely picked up hormonal declination, which is a given. Nowadays, my colleagues in internal medicine and primary care will not check an FSH level in a postmenopausal woman or her estrogen levels because they know FSH is going to be high and estrogen is going to be low. But that doesn't mean that you cannot fix that for the patient and reduce her risk for dementia, osteopenia, osteoporosis, cancer, degenerative joint disease, cardiovascular health. Why does colon cancer reduce in a hormone replacement woman and not in a woman who doesn't have hormone replacement? We don't know, but it can help change your future. So my simple statement is invest in yourself. $595 is not a lot of money these days, but it gives you tons and tons of data. Look at that data and then decide for yourself whether it's worth it for you to become a longevity patient or not.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dr. Umat. Here is that number to call to say, yes, I want to come in. I want to get healthier. I want to get what, Dr. Mixon?
Stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, sexier, but most important, happier.
Absolutely.
And happiness is what it's all about.
Absolutely. These are your last years. Let's make them the best years. That number to call to say, yes, I want a free health analysis appointment is 1-866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG. And if you'd like to go to our website and get lots of information about our clinics, you can go to lmclinic.com. That's lmclinic.com. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We will be back with Frank and with Paul in just a moment. This is Leading Edge Medicine.
If the devil danced in empty pockets, he'd have a ball in mind. With a 9-foot grin, a 10-piece band, and a 12-foot chorus line. I'd raise some loot.
Oh, we are back with more Leading Edge Medicine. Yes! I'm Lynette, along with both of my favorite doctors, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat.
We have to compare notes about how much we paid her to say that.
I know.
There we go.
Yeah.
Who's more favorite, me or him?
Yes. Yes. And then when Dr. Nelson or Dr. Gilbert or Pentland are here,
then you know.
I know, right?
That's right. And then they're in the favorite category too. You know, I love it because when I talk to people, they say, oh, I just love those doctors. They do, because they get to talk to you more than they probably talk to their own doctors.
I suspect that's true.
And ask, yeah, and ask questions. True. And I think every time that our listeners get off the phone, they feel more confident because they have more information, they're more educated, and they have some answers about what they can do for their health and their loved ones, too. So,
you know, I was talking to a patient of mine. He just got discharged from the emergency room, and it was an issue that there was nothing I can do to help him. It's acute. Mm-hmm. It's GI-related. He's going to have to see a GI physician about it, and then he's going to come back and talk to me. But I called him, and I said to him, you know, I'm so sorry. I feel helpless. There's nothing I'm doing. I'm just listening to your issue and what the acute episode that happened. And he goes, oh, you have no idea how much you help. Just talking to, because that's the thing, you know. Yes. He was in the ER for a period of time. Investigations were fine. He was discharged. His pain went away. But nobody really said anything. All they did was, okay, make an appointment with the GI physician, go follow up. Yeah. And it wasn't just a dialogue about what could have been.
People need to be able to talk to their doctors.
Yeah.
And the doctors need to be able to talk to and listen to the patients. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the current corporate medical model is performance-based. You need to churn the patients through. You're paid by, it's like piecework on a factory, an assembly line. You know, the more patients you see during the day, the better you do economically. And so you have to kind of schedule X, you know, 7 minutes, 8 minutes in each exam room. You know, we'll make it efficient. We're going to send you in, and the first, we're going to check their blood pressure and stuff. They're going to fill out the paperwork that's going to give you clues about their history so you don't have to ask them. The purpose for all that paperwork is so the doctor doesn't have to talk to you, actually.
Did I tell you that scenario with me? It happened very recently. I called a primary care provider about a patient of mine, and I wanted to seek her help to order some investigations for him. And she had declined to do that for him. So I called her. I was actually impressed that I was able to get her call back the same day. And I had warned everybody in the office that if this call comes through, put it through, I need to talk to this physician. And I called her up. I said, hey, I'm so glad you called me. Thank you for calling me. And she said, I know the name of the patient. Can you confirm the date of birth? And I said, yes. And I said, so how's your day going? And she said, she stopped for a second and she goes, I have 8 minutes before my next patient. What do you want?
Wow. Oh.
Yes.
And we've been saying seven. Wow. Okay. Eight.
But that's the key. And so, you know, the managers, the corporate managers have laid it out. They said each doctor is going to have so much time allotted for each patient. They're supposed to see so many patients. And we expect to see so many x-rays, so many EKGs, so many MRIs, the blood tests. We want to see this volume, you know, and it's all business.
Yeah.
So that's what happens. And so the patient is simply the raw material that gets fed into this corporate grinder to be processed for the benefit of the doctors so that they can then feed corporate.
Yeah.
It's the hospitals and the big clinic organizations that own the doctor that are actually making the vast majority of the profits, but the doctors are expected to produce.
Yeah.
That's not why I went into medicine nearly 50 years ago.
That's right.
Which is why almost 30 years ago, I dropped out of the insurance system because it is all insurance driven.
Yeah.
You know, the insurance companies assume that they can set this pay level per visit because you're going to make X number of visits a day and that'll make Y amount of revenue and your overhead will be Z and your taxes will be this. And then you'll get to take home this much smaller piece. And I like to have time to talk to the patients and hear their problems and think about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Because the correct answer doesn't always come
immediately,
unless the correct answer is defined as what's in the protocol.
Yeah.
And the protocols say, if this, then that, if that, then this, if this, then that. Yeah. And you simply follow the protocol down. And that then gives you the right answer.
Ah.
The real right answer is what satisfies the patient's needs.
Yeah.
You know, it can be their emotional needs, their physical needs, their settling their anxieties and their fears, or just educating them, because what they really need is to be educated about their problem so they can solve it.
Yeah, and to understand the problem and go, oh, that's why this is happening. Yes. I can change that.
But running them through the corporate mill doesn't do the job efficiently, unless they happen to have a standardized problem, in which case the standardized solutions are just fine. We're dealing with people whose biggest problem is how long they've lived on this earth and what happens to be going wrong and how can we fix it? And that's going to be different for every patient. And so we need those hour-long visits, you know, face-to-face with the patient to help solve the problems. And that's the greatest value that Longevity Medical Clinic gives, is those hour-long doctor visits.
Yeah. Absolutely. So powerful. And this show where people can call in and say, this is what's happening.
Yep.
All right. We've got Frank from Lakewood on the line. Hi there, Frank. Welcome to the show. How can we help?
Frank, are you there?
Uh-oh, Frank might have stepped away for a moment. We will keep him on the line and we'll come back in just a second. How about Paul? Paul, are you there? Welcome.
I am there.
Okay.
Wonderful.
How can we help you today, Paul?
Well, there is a product called Sugar to Fiber, and it's made by a company called ZBiotics, and it takes the table sugar and breaks it apart into glucose and fructose, and then stacks the enzyme stacks the fructose into a fiber called levin, which can be fermented by other bacteria in the gut. And I was wondering if you've, if anybody there, if Dr. Guinea Pig has tried it out.
Ah, Dr. Guinea Pig. That would be you, Dr. Mixon.
That would be me. I am the guinea pig for most things. No, I have not tried that one out. I try to avoid very much sugar in my diet. You know, table sugar, sucrose, is in fact glucose and fructose. Your enzymes break that down very quickly. You know, the glucose is used for your body and the fructose shifts your metabolism towards fat and feeds your bacteria. Or it feeds some of your bacteria. What you really want to be feeding those bacteria is soluble fibers.
Fiber,
right. Which this does.
Yeah.
It makes it into soluble fiber. And and it uses a spore form, Bacillus subtilis. And then their trademark is ZB423.
All right. Sounds very scientific, ZB423.
Yeah.
Some marketing person came up with that.
You know it. Yeah. Or it's a robot in Star Wars, but
that's
know.
Right. That's right. Yeah. Hey, ZB, get the laser cannons ready. No,
yes, Obi-Wan.
Their other product is called pre-alcohol, which deals with metabolites from drinking alcohol, but I don't drink, so I'm not really concerned about it. But.
No, and I have a family genetic deficiency. We do not make enough alcohol dehydrogenase, so I don't metabolize alcohol worth a hoot. And so half a beer, and I have trouble walking. So, because my liver doesn't denature it, and it goes right through the liver and hits me in the brain.
Are you telling the girls you're a cheap date?
I'm a cheap date. You're darn right. But I discovered decades ago I don't need to drink because I can be as seriously stupid sober as other people can drunk. So it works out all right.
But I was thinking that this might help people out with, and myself even, with A1C.
Well, it might. Yeah, I mean, alcohol raises A1C furiously.
The
probiotic that you're talking about.
Sugar to fiber.
Sure.
The sugar to fiber.
Yeah, the sugar to fiber conversion, which is kind of interesting. I mean, it had to be a soluble fiber, but that's exactly what your bacteria want anyway, is a soluble fiber.
Yeah. Lemon apparently is more rare. It's rare in our society, but I think it's from reading on it, it's not so rare in other societies.
Well, of course, the problem is other societies are not consuming this patented, you know, manipulated sort of glucose, fructose modification. They're actually eating plants.
They're actually eating the lemon.
Yeah. And if you're, if you're eating the fruits and you're eating the vegetables and you've got enough plant fiber in your gut, some of it's going to be soluble and some is going to be insoluble. The insoluble form is going to make you poop, and the soluble form is going to feed your gut microbes. I prefer that to a modified supplement, but I don't see that it can do you any harm. And if you want to spend the money on it, I think it's just fine. Personally, I'd rather eat more veggies.
Yeah. Okay. So I also wonder what it might do something with the fructose that's in fruit. Okay.
Well, it might. Again, I don't know. This is not a product that I've investigated. It's just never come across my database, and I've never really had enough interest to chase it down. It's because my personal preference is eat real food.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you for your input.
We're perfectly welcome, sir. Just remember, if you want to do it Dr. Mixon's way, first eat real food, then get off the couch, go use your muscles and burn it up. That's two things. Real food in, muscular activity out.
Yeah. I'm doing that. I'm an LMC patient, and Ken Pentland's my doc. So
good.
Oh, love nice. Dr. Pentland.
All right, super duper. Thank you.
Thank you for that call.
Thank
Paul.
You for the call, and thank you for being a patient.
Yes, absolutely. We will take a quick break here. We will be back with more of your phone calls. We have Frank back on the line, and Bob will get to you as well. If you have a question for the doctors, call in now. The phone lines are open. 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. We'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine. Rock and roll.
Yeah.
There you go. We're back with more Leading Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon. And we have Dr. Samira Umat this weekend as well. And your phone calls, 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. We have Frank back on the line. So let's get with Frank from Lakewood. Hi there, Frank. Thanks for calling back.
Hello, Frank.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
We
sure
do
can.
Indeed.
Okay. Yes, good morning to you all. My question is, my wife and I are both members, and about a month and a half ago, I had the TURP procedure done. And I'm wondering about putting on my testosterone cream. I've been putting it on since the TURP, putting it on behind my knee, and I'm wondering if having it on the genitals so close to the prostate will cause that prostate to start to enlarge again.
Should not. No. Generally, when they do a TURP, they buy you 5 to 10 years. The fact that you needed the transurethral prostatic resection, which is what TURP stands for, the fact that you need that resection says you are prone to enlarge your prostate over time. And they have not removed the whole prostate, but they've given you basically some room. They've kind of shelled out the part surrounding the prostatic urethra. One thing I would do for sure with you is talk to your doctor, make sure that you are getting progesterone. Okay, the progesterone is on your hormone list because progesterone helps to inhibit the prostate from growing. And if nothing else, slows that and buys you extra years before you have to go through this again. So that's the main purpose of the progesterone in men. Okay, slows prostatic hypertrophy, slows the growth. The testosterone itself is not what causes the enlargement, though.
Okay.
What causes
that? Add that cream.
The cream.
They add that cream to the testosterone.
Well, actually, yeah, you can add the cream. Although I like it as a separate cream. I apply my progesterone to my face, my neck, my upper chest, and that's because progesterone has some kind of nice cosmetic effects. It helps fill in fine lines and creases and makes your skin smoother and more elastic. And since I am as vain as any woman, I want as few lines and creases on my face as I can get.
I hear you.
And so, you know, I carry my blood levels fairly robust. I carry my levels a little higher than progesterone than Samara likes to carry the guys that she treats. This is one of our modest differences in clinical care,
which is fine.
I like a little more progesterone in my guys than she does, but the biggest purpose for the progesterone is obviously to keep the prostate from enlarging.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Well, I'll mention that to Dr. Jimenez next time I go in.
Sounds wonderful.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you
You're
for
welcome,
taking my
sir.
Call.
You're absolutely welcome.
And good luck to you. Thanks
Take
for
care.
Calling. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's one nice thing about being a patient at Longevity.
Yes.
You know, you have access to call your doctor at the clinic.
Right.
But then you've got doctors Mixon and UMass. Yeah, why am I suddenly blocking your name?
You were thinking of my name, Dr. Mixon.
No, actually, I was thinking of Samara. I said
yes.
I used to call her Samara.
That's right.
Dr. Samara didn't seem to fit, so I was...
It's like, wait a minute. That's so good. Okay, another call headed to Snohomish, where the beautiful antiques are downtown, and it's all decked out for fall. Bob is calling in. Hi, Bob. Welcome.
Hello, Bob.
Hi, doctors. I'll get right straight to it. Umbilicus hernias, they want to use mesh. It has a bad history, doesn't it?
Yeah, depending on which type hernia. I have not seen troubles with umbilical hernias and mesh, but I also haven't seen mesh needed in an umbilical hernia very often. That's usually such a simple hernia to fix.
Maybe it's big.
It must be massive.
Yeah.
How big is this thing? Are we talking about jelly bean, golf ball, baseball, softball? How big is this thing?
4 inches in each direction, and it.
4 inches.
The stuff comes into the what?
4 inches.
Yeah.
Holy mackerel! Yeah, that's a big one. All right. Okay. You know, their softball is smaller than 4 inches. This thing is massive.
And he's saying things coming into it?
Yeah, well,
your bowel is protruding through when you're straining.
Something comes into it, and then I feel ill after that.
That would be bowel. You're getting gut, probably omentum and bowel coming into it. No, they're not going to close that without mesh. That's cantaloupe size. See, I was hoping we were talking jelly bean. That's a one-stitch repair.
Jelly beans. I will never think of jelly beans the same way ever again, Jerry. Thank you.
So does the mesh prevent you from becoming fit in the belly area again?
Not really. But what happens is when you're trying to repair a central hernia like this, and this sounds more like a ventral than just umbilical. umbilical hernia is where that weak spot where the umbilicus, where the cord came as you were an infant, stays weak, and you've just got a little hole there. If we're talking 4 inches, that's more where the rectus muscles that come down both sides of your abdomen are supposed to be joined in the center.
Yeah.
And that sounds more like you've got a separation of that whole, so you've got a diastasis of the rectus muscles. That's going to be a great big thing. And so they're going to have to try to pull the muscles together and sew them. They're going to have to, and as men age, those muscles get thinner and weaker and more fragile. Mm. And so what they're probably thinking is they want to put a little mesh back behind that muscle to reinforce the closure.
So there's the large one and a tiny one in the same area.
Okay, well, they'll probably just separate the space between them and pull it all together as one big defect. It would be probably the easiest way to make that repair, just not having seen you, examined you, and, you know, and it's probably been 25 years or more since I've done a hernia repair. I used to do a fair number of them, but haven't done them in a long time since I've changed my specialty.
Mm-hmm. You haven't done one since I've known you.
No. It's not something I do, you know, on the dining room table here at the clinic. So,
that's interesting. On nuclear submarines, they use the officer's dining table for surgeries.
Yeah. All right. Well, see, I wasn't an officer. I was a grunt. I carried a rifle and slept in the mud. So.
We haven't done that, have we, Dr. Umat?
No.
But yeah, you know, technically, it's not a technically complex surgery. It's actually very simple to do, but it sounds like you've got such a big defect that just the mechanics of getting everything closed is why I think they're thinking about the necessity of mesh. Because in older men, you don't want to put too much strain on those muscles. If you pull those thin, older muscles together and put the stitches through the muscle, it'll tear. It won't hold. And so you can pull them as close together as you comfortably can, and then you have a layer of mesh underneath that extends over on either side of the defect so that you're spreading the stress on the muscle out over a larger area instead of just expecting the stitches to hold it together until it heals. The problem with mesh is that some people grow scar tissue, and bowel can get grown to the mesh and become adherent to the mesh. And in some cases, that causes no problems at all. In other people's situations, they can get enough scar tissue that it'll get kinked or obstructed, and then you have to go back in and try to remove the mesh and all the scar tissue and redo the process. And those are the horror cases you read about where you got big issues with mesh.
And for something this big, what kind of anesthesia, since you are very selective on anesthesia?
I am. I'm picky. I want to be as light as I can be. You know, once more, I'd almost opt for a combination. And once more, you have to talk to your anesthesiologist about this. But if they're not in a hurry, an epidural combined with sedation anesthesia might be a reasonable choice to give you as shallow an anesthesia as possible. If you can't feel anything from an inch or two above the belly button down, they don't need a whole lot of anesthesia. Then they can supplement that. The surgeon can throw in a little marcaine above it and give you some local help, and then the systemic anesthesia can be minimized. But that requires now essentially 3 separate types of anesthesia. And if it's a busy surgical day, the anesthesiologist is going to be opting to say, just let me do my job and get it over with. Because as we talked about, the corporate practice of medicine in offices is equally true in operating rooms. They need to turn the rooms over and get it done. And so there is a pressure to do whatever is fastest.
Mm-hmm. Is that helpful for you, Bob?
Yeah, thank you. And you should always promote longevity a little more often.
Okay. We'll do that.
You have to pay for the program, and some of the things that you talk about, you can help. Probably not this one, but most of them.
Well, some, yeah, mm-hmm. some. At least we can give them, you know, the right people to talk to or the test to go get done. So, but yeah, we.
So that wasn't a criticism, but it's a, you know, I've thought about that. You needed to say it more often in reference to the stuff that you do.
Yes. Well, and you're right. You know, the key here is that technically this is an infomercial. Mm-hmm. I buy the time. I spend over half a million dollars a year buying this time. On the other hand, I hate infomercials when people are just trying to sell you stuff. It just irritates the hell out of me.
And my wife and I are planning on coming. We've done some stuff with Dr. Nelson on six joints, and we did the gallery test with you.
Well, good. Nice. Thank you, sir. Yeah. Well, come on in. We will do our best to help you have the absolute
best. But no surgery on the dining room table.
No
surgery on the dining room table.
No, not anymore.
No. But I got to tell you, in my country doctor days, I did have people show up at the house. You know, I'd be working in the yard, and mom would be bringing this kid streaming blood.
Oh boy!
Across my lawn.
Oh boy!
You know, expecting me to stop and fix the kid right now. As you know, I guess my garage is cheaper than the emergency room.
Oh boy!
Country doctor days.
Have a good
interesting
have a good weekend. Okay.
All right. Take care.
Thank you, Bob. Bye-bye.
That's a great story.
That's good. Yeah. There you go. They won't catch diseases in your garage.
No, they wouldn't.
Pick up someone's cold.
Be careful who you sat next to in church too.
Yeah.
I would be doing consults in the grocery store, in the church pews.
Oh, my. Hi, Dr. Mixon, by the way.
Yeah, but in a small town, you know everybody.
Yeah. Yes.
Everybody knows who you are.
Yeah.
And they all know where you live.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a small town. It's a few blocks from their house to your house. They just kind of wander on by.
I just happen to be here.
It's 8 o'clock on a Sunday evening. Of course the doctor won't mind solving my problem.
Of course not. Yeah. No, it hurts when I do this. Oh, boy. Okay, I think we've got time for one more call. We're headed to Kirkland. We have Steve on the line. Welcome, Steve, to Leading Edge Medicine.
Hello, Steve.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. Is there a relationship between increasing blood pressure and losing muscle mass?
Yes.
Aging?
Also, anabolic hormone load.
Yeah.
Yeah. Blood vessels get stiff under two circumstances. One is with low testosterone, old age and low testosterone, people tend to have high blood pressure. On the other hand, non-physiologically elevated, the bodybuilders that are taking too much testosterone get really stiff blood vessels and very high systolic blood pressures. The ideal, of course, is in that central physiologic area. So too low causes blood pressure troubles, too high causes blood pressure troubles.
Okay. Wow. Okay, so it's not just as simple as losing muscle mass. It's indicating the physiological changes, the hormones and all that going on.
Yeah. The loss of muscle mass is a function of anabolic hormone load and growth factors. You know, we have things like IGF-1, which is produced from the growth hormone. You make growth hormone mostly between about 1 and 3 a.m. in your deep sleep. The growth hormone only survives about 20 to 30 minutes, but it triggers something in your liver called insulin-like growth factor 1. That is a growth factor that triggers your metabolism to make lean tissue. But it can't make lean tissue without testosterone and dehydroepiandrosterone. So you got two anabolic hormones in addition to the growth hormones that are necessary to make muscle, ligament, tendon, skin, heart. All of these things are made in response to the anabolic hormones and the growth hormones. And as we age, both our anabolic hormone load is declining you know, a 20-year-old man may run a testosterone level up around 1,200. He'll run a DHEA level around 500. He'll have his IGF-1 level up around 175 to 200. By 60, that 1,200 testosterone is down to around 200 or 250. The DHEA has dropped from 500 down to about 125. The IGF-1 has dropped from 175 down to about 85. And so all of these tools your body has to have to produce the lean tissue, including your heart, are fading away. And so, yes, you can exercise and you can tone up the muscle you've got, but you're very limited in the amount of new muscle you're going to make. And because your ligaments and tendons are fragile now, because they're not being replaced and repaired, you're much higher risk of tearing a tendon or a ligament and injuring yourself.
Okay. Wow. Wow. Amazing. Wow. Okay. Well, that's good to know, because I'm wanted to change up my exercise program. But thank you so much for the information.
You're welcome, sir. You're welcome. But
Bye-bye.
You know, I've got a... What time is it getting to be here?
No, we have a few more minutes left.
Yeah. I've got a gizmo. You know, I like to stay physically active. And I have just used my little dumbbells and my floor to do squats and push-ups and so on. But I had an injury this summer in which I had a spinal injury with a resulting discitis. And that inflammatory process in my discs just meant I could not move a foot. I mean, I actually had to call 911 at 3 a.m. To drag me off to the hospital because I couldn't roll over. I couldn't get up to pee. I couldn't move my legs. It was awful. And I spent 6 days in the hospital on high dose intravenous steroids, just trying to damp down that inflammation. The problem with the intravenous steroids is they shift your metabolism big time towards fat, made me ravenous and made me want to build fat. And so I gained about 15 pounds. In very short order of all fat, and the steroids also make your muscles weak. So I got weak muscles and more fat. Now I had to figure out how to exercise. And so my company president had me get a device in my office called a Gym Monster.
Okay.
Gym Monster.
That's right. And the Gym Monster actually keeps track of how much weight I move. So I push, pull, lift, you know, do all kinds of exercises on it. And every pound I lift, push, or pull, it records. In the course of an average day now, I'm moving between 25 and 33,000 pounds.
Whoa!
But then again, I'm running the anabolic hormone load of a 25-year-old man instead of a 77-year-old man. So, you know, for the fellow who just called, if you really want to be able to exercise and not get hurt, okay, come to Longevity Medical Clinic. Let us move those tools your body used to have back to where they used to be. If you have the tools, then you're able to make the tissues you want to make. And I want to grow heart and ligament and tendon and muscle and cartilage. I want my lean tissues to be as strong and durable as possible, as long in life as possible. That's a big thing in Longevity Medical Clinic.
Absolutely. We have one last call that we're going to slip in here, doctors. Lou from Linden. Welcome, Lou.
Hello, LL.
Hi. Good morning. Good morning. I was shocked, as I'm sure you were, to see Robert Kennedy join the Trump administration, a lifelong Democrat, Kennedy, from the famous Democrat family. As a young boy, I got to see President John Kennedy in person. And I'll always remember that. I got within 50 feet of him, and he was in an open convertible limousine where he died tragically 3 years later. But the question I have is, do you think Robert Kennedy will have a significant impact on the pharmaceutical medical industry in the United States?
He will be vigorously opposed. That I can promise. I don't know. I'm hopeful that his impact is positive all the way through. You know, I mean, I love my country. Okay. Mm-hmm. I was willing to fight for my country. I was willing to kill for my country. I came damn close to dying for my country. I want my country to grow and prosper. Mm-hmm. And I don't care whether it's Democrats, Republicans, you know, Martians with antennas coming out of their foreheads that do it. I want America to prosper and grow and be a wonderful, free place where free men and women can lead their own lives.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I really like about Robert Kennedy, though I do have some differences with some of his positions, but I really like his emphasis on human freedom, that you should be able to choose what you do and do not put in your body, and that you should have all of the available information available to you. The studies should not be hidden. They should not be deep-sixed, you know, and the studies should be freely published and available to everybody for every drug that is on the market. It irritates me when me when I'm in the medical literature trying to look something up, and they want to charge me $60 to look at one of the studies. Yeah, I spend $16,000 a year paying to look at studies because I want the information. But the average person, if they're somebody's offered them a drug, they shouldn't just have to take what the pharmaceutical company says about it. They should be able to go on PubMed, look up the paper, pull the paper down and read it. And if it has to do with a drug that you're being asked to put in your body, you should be able to read the peer-reviewed literature about that drug, including the good, but also the bad.
Yes. That sounds like maybe something Robert Kennedy could do. He could get open up all the records and studies so everyone can look at them.
Well, that would be nice. I mean, let's face it. Most people are not going to read the literature. You know, I have a lot of patience for wading through dense prose.
Everybody doesn't read that paper we get with our prescription, right?
No, most people don't. You know, they wad it up and throw it away. I'm one of the few beings that read it. Go ahead.
On a related question, does the stories I've heard about the Amish people seldom getting vaccines and having very little autism, is there some truth to the fact that that there's a link with the Amish people not being vaccinated and having very low rates of autism?
We may have to address that. Yeah. We have just seconds left.
Yes, you're going to have to listen to the next show, but I'll tell you what, I'm going to bring that up on the next show, which will start in about 2 minutes, maybe three. So, change to the other station. If you don't know where the other station is, go to our website, lmclinic.com. And there's a radio schedule there.
Absolutely.
Tell you where we're going to be next.
And we'll be back next week. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We're so glad you're here. Thank you for listening today.